Sarah Scholes on nuclear weapons and the future of the planet, and for her book, Countdown. Just call us, 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
KBOO just finished our annual All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We want to thank all of our supporters for helping us bring the community engaging, unique, and all-around fun special episodes and killer marathons. We wouldn't be able to do it without our listeners. And if you missed out on any of the programming, you can check out the list of specials at kboo.fm/thrills.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco. This is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, Code Pink disrupts Condi Rice on the UC Berkeley campus at an event with Chancellor Carol Crist on, get this, free speech issues on college campuses. Code Pinkers splattering mock blood around the crime scene there at the university against this action against former Bush national security. Condi Rice, who they were suggesting may have been part of war crimes committed by the United States. Also, more coming up, we've got Cynthia Papermaster. We've got the co-founder of Code Pink, Jody Evans. And we're going to be talking about the very limited so-called ceasefire that came out of the United Nations. And we're going to look at what's happening on the ground in Israel, because they are not happy. They do not want peace. Netanyahu wants ethnic cleansing, slaughter, and genocide. More on this. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. You may have heard there was the United States abstained on a ceasefire proposal at the United Nations. I guess that's the best they could do. Still, it doesn't guarantee that the war will end. In fact, it is continuing apace and the slaughter is continuing. But we're keeping an eye on all of that for you. Helping us to do that is a group called Code Pink. They have made history time and again. They have been main resistors in what's going on in the Middle East. They have lent a hand to the Arab and Palestinian community on their front line, in their frontline battle to resist this genocide. Jody Evans, it is good to have you with us on Flashpoints. I want to talk to you about your longer vision, bigger vision of what's going on here. But let's begin just with a quick response to the possibility of a ceasefire. What's your thinking? Do you have any hope here?
Well, I always have hope, Dennis, and thank you for having us on. And, you know, and also just the importance of your show and Pacifica in this moment of where there is so little ways to find out the truth and be, you know, listening to voices in a moment of not just a genocide, but where we are watching late stage capitalism, imperialism kind of implode with the only thing it has is weapons. And so why it is so important to stand with the Palestinians, stand up for, you know, stand against a genocide, stand against all the lies, is that this is the front line of a Pandora's box that has been opened that we cannot let, you know, they can't get away with it. And it is going to take all of us to continue to empower each other, speak truth to each other about what is actually happening. So yes, there's always hope, but we've also watched over the last 5-6 months, the U.S. lie, BB for sure lie, BB's, you know, just getting away, a psychopath getting away with murder after murder, that he wants to shock us into stupidity, into silence, into depression, and continue his impunity that Biden allows. And that is what we're witnessing, and we have to stay vigilant in the face of it and not let them get away with the murder and the genocide, but to continue to be in the streets, to continue to be engaged, to continue to share, you know, what we know is that we have to get to peace and we cannot let this continue. So a ceasefire is good. Let's just say it happened because they tried to pull a fast one last week by proposing a ceasefire that was full of lies that Russia, Algeria, and China said no to. So they had to, you know, come back with something that the U.S. would be shamed by not. If they were to veto the next ceasefire, shame on them. So it's been a back and forth that is being led with some leadership around the world that has courage and is watching the lies and watching the duplicity. Biden says one thing out of his mouth and does another thing. The vote and the signing over the weekend of the bill of the budget that is giving another $3.5 billion to Israel. You cannot say that you care about the lives of the Palestinians and continue to send weapons. That is a lie. And we can have to continue to call Biden out. He's trying to play both sides. It is not true. It's not. His behavior is all that matters, and he's behaving by continuing to send weapons. So it was a huge thing for them to abstain and to finally get a 2-week ceasefire. In the pattern of things, this is a big deal, and it's not what we want. We need a permanent ceasefire. And we need the U.S. to show up in their leadership and stop sending weapons. Even though Congress and the Senate voted for it, it can't go. You cannot send weapons and say you care about the people of Palestine. And you, in that budget, it also had to stop funding UNRWA, which is a crime. That is how aid gets to the people in Palestine. And to say that it is unfunded until 2025 is a crime. And then, you know, the attacks on South Africa. that you can attack South Africa, who is just trying to stop a genocide, is more of, you know, imperialism trying to get in the way of any form of resistance, intelligence, and truth.
Can you talk a little bit about your response to the way in which Code Pinker, our good friend, a retired librarian by the name of Cynthia Papermaster, was treated by Pelosi and by the powers that be, compared to the way we treat mass murderers and genocidists? I mean, it seems there's a problem here.
Yeah, so it is part of the asymmetry that we are looking at, that, you know, we're looking at with Israel and Gaza. The asymmetry being the victims are the Palestinians. You know, the victims of settler colonialism over 75 years, dehumanization, oppression, violence, daily violence. The violence of living under oppression is daily. So here you have them, the victims, but Israel pretending like they're the victims, even though those that are oppressed have a right to resist. And I am not for any form of killing anyone. But when you are an oppressor, the oppressed have a right to resist. So here we have a beautiful human, Cynthia Papermaster, who's retired and therefore gives her life and her coin in every way she can to stop the madness, to be in the streets, to also be disarming. I mean, Cynthia does her activism with love and care. When you go into action with Cynthia, it's colorful. She feeds you, you know, she bakes bread, she makes tea. You know, it's activism in the disarming form of Code Pink activism. It's also local peace economy activism. It's meant to care for the activists whose hearts are still alive and not contracted and used by the war economy. It's like everyone comes, it's like we can still feel, we still have empathy. And you're out there saying, how dare you, Nancy Pelosi, vote for a genocide, fund, you know, the murder of the Palestinian people. And she's so passionate in this that she puts her hands in the blood made, you know, that is under the tutelage of Hazami in D.C., who makes the blood every day to do a die-in every day, who's outside of Blinken's house every day with this recipe of wash-offable blood that none of the D.C. police or the State Department ever, you know, arrest anyone around. So she's got that out there. She's talked to Hazami. She puts her hands in all the paint that has been spread all outside of Nancy's house, and she puts two handprints on her garage door. A cop sits there and watches her do it. And then all of a sudden, a week or so later, it's a felony, vandalism. Now, the visual is on the Code Pink website, and it is so tame, clearly arising from her frustration of the violence of Nancy Pelosi's votes. Nancy Pelosi gets to murder people in Palestine, but Cynthia can't put wash-offable paint handprints on her garage door. And then to be arrested and kept overnight for this, and then to be basically, I'm sure Nancy told them, you know, hold her for as long as you can. They literally kept trying to keep her as long as they could. And I think Cynthia will speak to what that experience was for something that is so minor. So we're watching the minor being turned into the major and the major being shrubbed under the rug. And that is what we are watching in so many ways. It's not just Gaza. I mean, it's the violence of the empire is out there. The people in Congress, I have just spent, you know, and I hope Cynthia talks about her coming to Congress to be with us. I mean, when you watch the stupidity and the violence of the people who are members of Congress, actually no humility, no empathy, and no understanding of what they're doing, and history will not be kind. They are behaving in ways the people did around slavery, around the genocide of the American indigenous people, and around the Holocaust. It's all done within a story that the people doing it feel good inside of, and we're watching that live. You know, Code Pink tweets it every day. The stupidity of the members of Congress that are willing to be violent. And that is where we live right now, and it calls on all of us to be engaged, because they are getting away with murder every day.
And I want you to say a little bit more about that. We will welcome in Cynthia, and we've got a bit of sound from the protest today with Condi Rice at the University of California, Berkeley, where they were having a forum on free speech. So I guess they got plenty of that. But do you feel, is it your sense that we are in a moment in history, in terms of, like, everybody's probably going to remember where we were as this unfolded. It would be very hard for many of us to forget what's going on. Is this one of those places where what you do, how you act, might have everything to do with your own future and the future of the world? Do you feel that about this moment?
Totally. Well said, Dennis. I mean, that is the moment we are living in, and it is a moment that will change the world we live in. And we have no idea where that change is going, and that's why your engagement matters. And I think of Aaron Bushnell, who self-immolated himself out, you know, in front of the Israeli embassy, who was so frustrated by the genocide that he took such an extreme act. And one of the things he said right before was, do you ever wonder what you would have done during slavery, or what you would have done around the American genocide, or what you would have done around the Holocaust? You are doing it now. And it is for us to look at ourselves and our lives and understand why these things happen. They happen because good people stay silent. They happen because of the banality of evil that you can see in the Zone of Interest, that movie that won Best Picture, where the guy who made it is getting attacked for telling the truth. We live in a time of 1984. You know, let's look at everything that has taught us about this moment and treat it correctly, because this is the moment, and what you are doing matters. And if you stay silent, the darkness will continue and it will get worse. And we look at what's happening in Gaza and we think it can't get worse. I mean, killing babies in an incubator, I thought it couldn't get worse. It gets worse by the day, and it matters. The wave of truth and love and care and the resistance to violent empire that is has to be in form right now. This is real.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. That is Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. Let's listen to a little bit of the sound from today's visit to UC Berkeley by Code Pink, and a bit of their interchange with the former National Security Advisor for Bush. Listen.
And I want you to know that she is a war criminal. She's not somebody to admire. Just because she was Secretary of State, she carried out Bush and Cheney's murder of thousands of people in Iraq and Afghanistan.
You have to leave.
Ma'am,
you
have to leave. That's the kind of Lisa Rice actually is.
Excuse me, ma'am. Is this your stuff?
Thank you for listening, but don't listen to her. She's a war criminal.
Well, that happened earlier today at UC Berkeley. Joining us now, free from the San Francisco jail system, taking action again against what she believes, and many of us believe, is an ongoing, expanding genocide. Cynthia, welcome back to Flashpoints. You can say hello to Jody. We're
Hi,
happy
Jody.
To have
Thank
you back
you,
outside. Welcome.
Thanks so much.
Would you take a moment, and we're happy that you're out, would you take a moment to say what that looked like, say a little bit more? This is radio, and we love radio, but maybe say a little bit more about what happened today and the impact. How did Condoleezza Rice act? What was her response? Free speech.
She looked at me really intently when I stood up, and I had a little code pink flag with me calling for peace, beautiful little flag, and I was dressed in pink, and the audience started, you know, saying, sit down, you know, all this. But she just was looking at me really intently because I probably don't look like her cartoon idea of a quote-unquote protester because I'm a retired law librarian and I dressed really nicely for today's occasion at Zellerbach Hall. And I had red paint on my hands, which I held up, bright red paint, so that people could see symbolically what Condoleezza Rice is all about, which is enabling the... not only enabling the murder of people in Afghanistan and Iraq, but now, today, promoting the genocide in Gaza and the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. And I said very loudly, you are an inveterate liar, warmonger, and supporter of torture and the slaughter of children. Shame on you, C, for inviting you here. You are a disgrace to humanity. So I really let my dark side come out there, and I apologize to anyone who's offended by that.
Jody, you have a question for Cynthia?
Well, Cynthia, you know, what I'd love for you to share is, because I was talking about how important it is to be in the streets and be engaged, and, you know, for the listeners, because... you know this, if people feel like, what can I do?
Yes.
And you do so much. How can you, I mean, maybe talk about going to D.C. and you know, how mm-hmm. easy and quick but impactful it is because nobody's doing it. I think, you know, it's like we all think, oh, it's just so hard, but how much difference can you make because you show up?
Yes. And thank you for that question, Jody. I want to encourage everyone listening to take Jody's words to heart that she shared with us a few minutes ago. This is the moment right now when if you are silent, I hate to say it, but you are complicit. And I don't mean to say that to shame anyone or guilt anyone, seriously. People should do what they can and what they feel comfortable doing. I did get on a plane and go to Washington, D.C. I did go to Nancy Pelosi's office where they shut the door and locked it. I did sit down in front of her office and I got arrested with another person. And if you're not comfortable getting arrested, you don't need to do that. But there's plenty you can do. Go to codepink.org, see what our various campaigns are, join in, get involved locally. It doesn't hurt to do this. It feels really good to take action against what you see going on around. And it's a collective trauma that we're all feeling right now, I believe. You know, when I was up at Pelosi's in February, I asked the crowd there, who here is having trouble sleeping? And all their hands shot up. You know, we don't need to stay in this dark place all the time. We can be in collective action together. And let's do that, please. Go to codepink.org, see what the various events are in the Bay Area. Join us in those events. Come to our gatherings. We have wonderful loving gatherings where I do feed people. Yes, I do. I bake pies quite often.
Thank you, Joey, Cynthia, for your words. It's inspiring. Thank you.
Cynthia, can I ask you, for the people listening, are you, is it scary? Are you afraid to be arrested? What exactly does it feel like? You say it actually feels good.
Yes.
What is that about?
Well, 99.9% of the time when I have been arrested a few times, I've chosen the time because I've been committing civil disobedience. And those arrests are respectful. They are not harm. They don't get brutal with me. I'm an older white woman with white hair, you know. But those arrests are my choosing. I choose. The arrest at Pelosi's house, which just happened a month after I put my red handprints on her garage door, that arrest was not of my choice. That's happening to me, so it feels quite different to me. And I'm going to court tomorrow morning for that. And I spent 2 days in jail this last week for a felony, a vandalism of putting my washable red handprints on her garage door. So in answer to your question, it doesn't scare me at all when I choose to be arrested for civil disobedience. And I encourage people to try it in a safe situation where you're with Code Pink and we do what's called a green action, so we know that we'll disperse when they tell us to, and some people will want to stay on and some people will be willing to get arrested, and we provide jail support for you. We're with you every step of the way. We don't want people to be frightened. We don't want people to be hurt, but we do need to speak up. So sometimes the cost of that is getting arrested, but it's your choice to do that or not.
Jody, talk a little bit about how you see Code Pink acting in this context. Is this, in essence, what it was born for this kind of action, this kind of resistance? What is the special role that you see Code Pink playing in this kind of resistance of really an ongoing, it's a lot of things, but it certainly is an expanding genocide?
Well, so Code Pink started when Bush was frightening the American people into supporting him on a war on innocent people in Iraq. So Iraqis were also innocent people, and that war, you know, the war on terror that came out of, you know, 9/11 has killed almost 6 million people and cost the U.S. taxpayers $20 trillion. So it was more silent. It wasn't on your phones every day, and it didn't happen at the speed, the intensity, or the violence that we're watching in Gaza. But Code Pink exists to stop the murder of innocent people by the imperialists in power in the United States. And let's just say it's the starving to death of people in Cuba. It's the disruption of life in Haiti to where people die. It's the violence in the Congo or in Somalia, or it's the you know, starving people in Venezuela and the sanctions there. They're totally destroying the entire middle class in Iran by starving them there. Sanctions are a tool of war. They're, I call, a silent bomb, because they kill and maim and destroy in whole different ways and really undermine the fabric of society. And I want to say that what the U.S. imperialism does is it also undermines the fabric of the society inside of the United States. The dumbing down of the United States, I mean, I'm 70 years old, like watching on purpose, not only the dumbing down of the United States, but also the taking away of who we are as caring people by creating systems that just, you know, have people too busy, take children away from parents. You know, there's a whole system out there of no care. So you almost get separated from the whole idea of the importance of care and nurturance, the importance of a strong parent. There's no strong parent here. Like, members of Congress would say to me, well, Israel is our ally. We've got to support our ally. I said, if that means friend, right? If my friend has a machine gun and they're about to go out and kill an innocent person, I like take them down and take the machine gun away. What kind of friend are you? You know, like, what kind of parents are we being that, there's all these people that work in weapons manufacturing that are the most horrific ways to kill people. What kind of human being are you? But everybody's just, you know, I've got to get a paycheck and I've got to get my insurance and I got to get my kid through school. So the focus is on something else than the what you're spending your life on that is participating in a level of violence globally that is profoundly horrific. The United States has control of 75% of the weapons on the planet, including the largest store of nuclear weapons. And what they are doing is imperialism. I mean, I just call it monarchy now. When you're watching Gaza, that's just monarchy. That's, and there was never this horrible of a monarchy. But it's that sense of impunity that they can do anything, kill anyone, destroy anything without impunity. And if anybody in the United States tells me that they live in a country with democracy, they're on crack. I mean, how can you say you live in a country that believes in democracy when the UN, every country voted for a ceasefire, you know, almost 6 months ago? How many lives would you have saved if the United States wouldn't have vetoed it? That is not democracy. How many vetoes of a ceasefire did it do? That's not democracy. When the rest of the world is saying this is a genocide and you're saying no, it's not, you're just insane. But that's not democracy. And let me just tell you, when you're in the halls of Congress, there is the AIPAC either frightens everyone to death or they own them. And they're either spouting their message or not. That your Congress is owned by another country is insane. And then I think Biden's already raised $1 billion, so he thinks because he has $1 billion in the bank it doesn't matter that he supports Bibi Netanyahu because he's going to buy the next election. And then you've got media that can't tell the truth and just serves the hateful violence. The New York Times that did a article that talked about rape as a weapon of war, where they talked about a woman that's family said she wasn't even raped, but they're going to use it to drive a genocide. That's not democracy. We live in insanity. I had a taxi driver that said, oh, but you know, didn't you watch Star Wars? All empires are stupid. Well, yes, if we live inside of a stupid empire, it is our job to be the resistance. It is our job to point it out. It is our job to shine lights on the stupidity and the violence that we live in every level. And, you know, certainly the canaries in the coal mine, people of color, LGBTQ, you know, like, there are people inside of this who live very much as the canaries in the coal mine, who are violated every day, dehumanized, and not held in care. So it's happening, and if we want to stop it, here is a moment to stand up, because it's very clear, very easy to name, and truth is so on our side that, you know, the rest of the world says the emperor has no clothes. The United States is walking around naked. It is not the shining, you know, castle on the hill. It is a toxic waste dump.
One of the ways in which the sort of liberal Democratic Party has sort of acted is to, if Biden doesn't win the election, it's because the extreme leftists didn't know what the hell was going on. And so their actions for withholding their vote or questioning Biden over Trump caused us to elect Trump. Do you want Trump? That's the line.
That's the other example of no democracy. Like, no, you don't know how to think. I'm gonna scare you. I mean, the American people are frightened constantly, so they just keep pulling the scare you button instead of, I'm allowed to witness this moment and see both of these are evil. They are never going to take me where I want to go. And maybe, you know, my vote is going to be uncommitted. You know, maybe in November there is a 30% uncommitted. And then what is the country going to do? But if we don't stop and say, no, I am not going to participate in this madness anymore, we know where it's getting us. Where this empire is murderous, but it's also suicidal. So, you know, when people are committing suicide, you got to act. And when people are murdering, you got to act. But I think the end result of this empire is very patently suicidal. And so
you know, at every level, you have to take yourself off of it and act as a form of resistance to it. And that is how you honor the Palestinians that are being murdered. If you do not take the baton of resistance up, then you're not feeling what is happening. To be, you know, you need to take the baton of the martyrs and take it on and be that form of resistance yourself.
And Bravo. That's powerful, Jody. And Cynthia, speaking of, you know, action and happening, you're getting ready to go to court tomorrow, right? You're gonna have to be in court to face these charges. How are you feeling about that? What's going on there? When do you have to be there, and what are they asking of you?
Well, it's just the they're gonna try to continue it over for a month so that I can get a case, you know, organized and planned for my defense, and I will eventually plead not guilty because washable red handprints on her garage door does not rise to a felony, no way, no how. So, but I got a letter today from Joe Biden asking me to join him in this moment. And, you know, I can't vote for Biden because he's spending U.S. treasure and blood in Israel's genocide in Gaza. There's no way I'm voting for him. So I love Jody's answer. I think we are being suicidal. You know, what if Israel nukes Iran, for example? A lot of people are talking about that possibility. Israel's the only country with nuclear weapons in over there. But let me just say one ray of hope, if I may take a moment to do that. Actually, two things. Join us in action, number one. You'll feel like you won't feel as depressed. I guarantee it. You're going to feel better if you take some action. And don't just watch this silently. So I don't mean to guilt anyone or shame anyone, honestly. I just am inviting you to take action with us. And the other thing I want to share is take the pledge to withhold your taxes for 2023 when we're ready to launch that campaign, and it will be really soon. Do you want to ask me any questions about that?
Well, what do you mean withhold your taxes? You mean not pay your income tax? Isn't that illegal?
I mean just make a pledge that you don't intend, and intention is not something real concrete, but that you don't intend and you don't want to pay your 2023 taxes, and you have until October. There's a filing extension that everyone can get very easily. It's like an opinion poll, but it's saying we're not going to give you our money for war. We're not going to give you our money for your immigration, inhumanity to people. We're not going to give you money because you're not doing the things that we need you to do with our taxes. We need clean energy. We need affordable housing. We need health care, universal health. We need all of these things. And across the political spectrum, there is agreement that we need these things. You know, it's not a left or right thing. It's left, right, and center. People are unhappy with the way their taxes are being spent. So this pledge just is a way of making that concrete. It's galvanizing all of that dissatisfaction into an actual pledge, and you can not pay your taxes if that's what you want to do, if you feel like taking that risk. But we just want this pledge to show, especially the Democrat, the war party, but also both parties, we don't want to pay taxes for this anymore. We don't want our money going to Lockheed Martin and the merchants of death and that kind of thing. So Dennis, that's just a little ray of hope that I'm kind of dangling out there.
Beautiful. And let me give you, I know that
let Jody, me just say
to catch
also,
a plane, but please, go.
Yeah, I do. I also want to say that the pledge is really to see if we can get a big number of people to pledge. Because doing it alone is a lonely thing, but if a lot of people want to do it, then it can have some effect. They can pick people off singly, but it's harder to pick them off when you have a mass. And I also want to say, you know, in engagement, there's more than code. There's just tons of organizations you can be engaged with. And, you know, codepink.org, you can go to and find out what's happening locally. But, you know, find someone near you. And the other thing is, you can do stuff yourself. I mean, you know, I was so impressed with Cynthia's sign today, just like with the war criminal right in front of Condi, like there she is with war criminal. What moves you?
But the one thing is not to stay silent, and to, it's really about engagement. It doesn't happen thinking about it. It happens, and you're not angry. You're not, you know, the really important thing it could think is you're disarming. And what you're doing is educating. Right now, we live in a country where people are just lost. Like I said, they're in the banality of evil. And some people are confused. So you always want to think of your activism as a way to teach, as a way to show other people courage, as a way to show an alternative to what's happening, and be able to have a beautiful conversation about love and life and what we all need, because everybody's afraid. But, you know, when you talk, I just want to take it back to the hope that you asked for at the beginning, Dennis. Is hope the only recognizable feature of hope is action. And that is our engagement for creating the future. And if we just sit back and think it's going to happen without our engagement, without our shoulder against the will, moving it towards peace, moving towards love, moving towards the cooperation of people, and and never the dehumanization of anyone, and practice that ourselves, and that at part of being in community. And I wanted to say, you know, the Code Pink, watching the Code Pink community when Cynthia was in jail is that, because it also puts you in a community. And to be part of that, and I don't live in San Francisco, so I could only witness, you know, and there were all these people that are concerned, they're talking to each other, there's four people waiting for a day outside with her dog, not knowing what can happen, and they're being in a community together. So, you know, it's like, find the community you want to be engaged with, because it also helps nourish your heart for the insanity that you're having to witness, which is real and which is on purpose to destroy you, your psyche. So being together and being engaged together is also, you do that for your own survival, to not get swept away in the murderous rampage suicide mission, and instead to be workers for life and love.
You know, Jody, my poetry teacher, the late Muriel Rukeyser, wrote a poem called How We Did It. It was such a beautiful poem about her and Dr. Spock and how people decided to take action. They were going to be arrested in Congress and be dragged out. And it's a beautiful poem about how so many of them that participated were in different places, but they did all agree that the war, that the killing had to stop. And that feels like something that we should all be able to agree on, that the killing, that starvation as a weapon of war, that these horrific things must stop.
Amen.
Thank you for having me on. I'm going to jump on my plane.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you for spreading the peace and the love. And
you're
Cynthia,
welcome.
You're a rock star. Thank you.
I know.
Thank you. Be
you
safe.
You are too, Jody. You're the best.
So now it's just me and you alone here, Cynthia, and the rest of the world. Do you want to give a final shout out, or what's on your mind, closers, if you will?
Yeah, I want to shout out to Tarnal Abbott, who took Lucky for me when I was in jail. Thank you, Tarnal, and for your continuing support, and all the new people with Code Pink. Five more people joined Code Pink today at the Condi event. We are growing so fast because people want to be in action. We're giving them that opportunity, and you have given us a great opportunity, Dennis. Thank you. I can't thank you enough.
All right, well, I can't thank you enough, and you have inspired me, and I just, you know, in thinking about you, and I hear echoing way back in the childhood of my becoming politically aware, I just hear that Holly Near, no more genocide in my name. I wish we could dig it out somewhere. No more genocide in my name. I don't know if you ever heard that by Holly Near, but somebody will send it to me, I'm sure. Cynthia, keep us posted. And what's the best way if people want to follow what you're up to and Code Pink? How do you remind them how to do it?
CodePinkSFBay@gmail.com. CodePinkSFBay@gmail is the email address that you can send to me and our group, and we'll get you plugged in. It's pretty simple. CodePinkSFBay.
All right.
Great.
All right.
Thank you, Dennis.
Be safe. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We will take a break. We'll be back. Smith, for reminding us that people do have the power. This is a radio station that is empowered by the people. It's a listener-supported, no-holds-barred, truth-to-power radio station called KPFA Pacifica here in the Bay Area. And we are proud to come to you because we are sponsored by the people that make it all possible. And we're going to now take a look at what's been happening at the UN and what the Israeli reaction is. Netanyahu is on fire. Joining us to talk about it is Richard Silverstein. He blogs at Tikkun Olam. He's a wonderful investigator and keeper of information, watching the situation on the ground in Israel in the context of this currently in this ethnic cleansing. Richard, welcome back to Flashpoints. Netanyahu is definitely furious. They canceled the trip to D.C. What have you been able to grok about the response to the... They're terrified about a peace or a ceasefire, because I guess that's the beginning of the end of Netanyahu's reign.
Well, to give it a little context, the U.S. has been trying to get Israel to agree to a ceasefire, and it's also opposed an Israeli invasion of Rafah, where 1.5 million Gazans are sheltering in tents city. And Netanyahu demanded that Biden veto this UN Security Council resolution, which called for an immediate ceasefire. And the U.S. had vetoed two previous versions of a resolution. And the U.S. had put forward a resolution of its own, which was vetoed by China and Russia because it didn't go far enough. So what happened today was the same resolution that the U.S. had vetoed twice, it abstained. So that meant that all 14 other members of the Security Council voted yes, and the resolution was adopted. However, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. called the resolution non-binding, in quotes. There is no category for a Security Council resolution being non-binding. All resolutions are binding. But what she did mean was that the U.S. would veto any attempt to enforce the resolution. So the U.N. Security Council would be entitled to take direct measures to demand that Israel engage in a ceasefire. And if it refused, the UN could levy sanctions against Israel. In some cases, it could even dispatch a peacekeeping force to impose the UN resolution. And this is what the U.S. was saying it would refuse to do. So Biden basically wants to sit on the fence and thinks he's satisfying Israel on one hand and progressives here on the other. And he's satisfied neither. And he enraged Netanyahu, who, as you said, pulled all the people that were coming to D.C. to speak with the U.S. officials who were going to lobby them against a Rafah invasion. So we have here a fit of pique by Bibi, and we have a real deepening rift between the U.S. and Israel.
Doesn't this give you at least an inkling or a sense of that he may very well be hell-bent on doing that invasion, despite the 1.2 million people there who will then be on the run again, and many will die, and some are already starving?
Yeah, I don't think that Netanyahu cares about Palestinians. In fact, he has members of his governing coalition, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, who actually think the more Palestinian bloodshed, the better. So he's not going to lose any votes in Israel by invading Rafah. And it's possible that he will, in a fit of spite and pique, decide to invade Rafah. One hopes that there is some smidgen of intelligence and rationality that would prevent him make him hesitate before doing that. But you can never underestimate Bibi's willingness to do the wrong thing, which explains the genocide that Israel has imposed on Gaza. And if Israel does invade Rafah, I would predict that the death toll will double, if not more. And it depends how long the invasion lasts. But in order to do what Netanyahu says, which is eradicate Hamas in Rafah, which he can't do, by the way, but in order to do that, he will have to spend weeks. His troops will have to spend weeks in Rafah. And that's why I predict this will become, I don't know if we want to call it genocide 2 or just genocide squared or whatever, but look for a huge increase in casualties.
Yeah, and we don't even really know what the numbers are now, given the nature of the situation and the way in which so many have been buried under the rubble. Now it's coming up to famine and really weapon as a war, famine as a war of genocide. This is, if Bibi, this is, the war is his future, isn't it? Essentially. So he either has a war or he has no career anymore as a politician.
Right. His popularity approval rating in Israel is down in the low two figures, if that. I would guess it's around 10 or 12%. I haven't looked at the latest polls. So no one wants him to be prime minister, but also no one wants to depose him during a war. So So he will remain prime minister, barring any kind of earthquake political development. He'll remain prime minister until there's a ceasefire. So he has no motivation to agree to a ceasefire. In fact, he's happy when Hamas rejects a ceasefire, which they did today, because that allows him to continue the war. And as you said, as soon as the war is over, then the pressure is released and the politics, the internal domestic politics in Israel take over. And he has a stranglehold basically on his coalition. So as long as he keeps that stranglehold, he won't have to go to elections. But it really is almost a matter of time before he is toppled. But I should, you know, say to your listeners that that doesn't mean that much, because whoever replaces him, even if it's Benny Gantz, who is a so-called, you know, centrist or moderate, he will have very little difference a bit with Netanyahu. And Gantz himself was chief of staff in 2014 and was is guilty of war crimes then. So the moderate is not much different than Netanyahu, the right-wing extremist.
What do you, how do you read the Jewish community and the sort of the actions happening in the United States in terms of those who are resisting the genocide? I think you're in Seattle. They've taken some actions. Do you have a sense that this could actually cost Biden the election?
Oh, yes, I believe it can. I don't want to say it will for sure, because we have to wait and see what further developments happen. But as when you and I talked earlier, there's only about 1% separating Trump from Biden. So any mistake, any controversy, scandal on either side or the other will have a really direct impact on the result. So as I told you earlier, 27% of Americans approve of his Gaza policy, Biden's. So that's a really bad augur for the coming election. And even American Jews, 50% of American Jews want a ceasefire, an immediate ceasefire. And many, many Americans want a halt to U.S. arms exports to Israel, which is a position that was considered on the far left end of the spectrum before this war. So there's really a shift in an earth-shattering shift going on in American politics towards Israel. And Netanyahu, of course, is furthering that with the things that we talked about just now. And I think that the squad's view, calling for ceasefire, calling for conditioning aid on adherence to international law, those are going to become normalized positions in American politics, despite the $100 million that AIPAC is going to funnel into Democratic primaries to defeat candidates who hold those positions. And most of that $100 million is going to come from Jewish Republican billionaires. So I don't think that is going to augur well with the American people in the long term either. So I think Israel is on a gradual, slow, downward spiral.
Well, and this, do you ever think that the United States would consider actually taking actions, limiting the weapons flow? I mean, they also have an armory there in Israel. We know that, so there are already weapons on the ground. But do you ever think you would see an action where the United States would try and limit Israel? We see Netanyahu, just this limited ceasefire has got him crazy.
Well, I think that we're going to have to wait for a Democrat running for president who is not Joe Biden. Joe Biden was born with a Zionist spoon in his mouth. He's been a Zionist since he came to Congress. And he's just bought and paid for by the lobby. I mean, not just the cash that comes to the Democrats and to him from lobby donors, but but he just has this you know, blind faith in Israel and Zionism. So, you know, I think a president like Obama, in that general mold, without some of the limitations Obama had, I think will come closer to this, and it will require more support among Democrats. I mean, we just had senators, 22 Democratic senators, called on Biden to do an immediate ceasefire. So these are the kinds of slow, incremental developments which will lead to a president, a Democratic president, at some point, hopefully in the near future, who will be much more robust, much more proactive than Biden has been. We have to wait for the dinosaurs of the old Democratic Party, like Biden, to die off before we'll get a new generation, hopefully.
There might be none of us left if we wait too long. Anyway, Richard Silverstein, these are tough times. We really thank you for watching the Israeli side of this, if you will. Richard Silverstein blogs at Tikkun Olam. He's a wonderful journalist, and we appreciate the time. Thanks, Richard.
One quick thing, Dennis.
Yes.
I have a new piece coming out in the New Arab this week, so I hope your listeners will take a look at that.
What's it called? Do you know the name, or they don't? You know,
I don't have the name of it, but it's on these general issues that we've been talking about. The New
Beautiful.
Arab.
The New Arab. Beautiful.
Yeah.
The New Arab. Thank you.
Thank you
so much, Richard. Take care. And
bye-bye.
This is Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I want to let you know that we're going to be speaking tomorrow with Ramzi Baroud of the Palestine Chronicle, wonderful intellect and visionary on Palestine, with a powerful website, the Palestine Chronicle, up north. So you want to tune in for that tomorrow. We're also going to be taking a look at Africa in a very different way. So stay tuned. My name is Dennis Bernstein. The show is Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're coming to you from KPFA here in the Bay Area, and we've been doing that for the last 75 years. We plan to continue. Stay with us.
That wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.